And more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. A little alcohol is supposed to be good for everyone, including pregnant women. Not so much. Binghamton University shows that even a small amount of alcohol can adversely affect future generations. We'll share the latest on that and dispel the myths that otherwise pervade out there. Also from the Natural Blazers, new cannabis capsule so effective that it's replacing big pharma painkillers, well, like Vicodin and some ibuprofen. So we'll tell you what that is. Vitamin K improves glucose metabolism and insulin sensitivity. That's good. And we'll also take a look at extra virgin olive oil, extra heart help as well, from a major university in Italy, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'm going to do a commentary today from Chris Hedges from Truth Dig called The Graveyard of the Elites. I'm also going to offer a challenge to the people of South Carolina. We're heard all over the United States, all over the world. And for those of you who voted for Hillary Clinton, which is your right, I'm not contesting that, shouldn't you know more about her? Because you know right now what she's saying about herself. Is it true? A clip from Cornel West about who's doing more and has done more for African Americans and people of color, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. We'll also take a look at the issue that rarely gets discussed, and that is mental illness. I'm going to have you listen to a woman who for 30 years was misdiagnosed as schizophrenic and who found out that those voices she was hearing in her head, she's just fine. That mental illness is a result of intolerable circumstances and trauma, not brain chemical imbalances or defective genes. Then we've all heard about how the people want to be a good Reagan Republican and build the wall and keep these illegals out. Okay, if you really want to be a Reagan Democrat or Republican and a George H.W. Bush Republican when it comes to the people coming across Mexico in particular, why don't we hear what they actually said? So we're going to hear from Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush about the immigration and the U.S.-Mexican border. They said this in 1980, so if you plan on supporting them and Donald Trump, you can't do both. Also, I want you to hear a short piece for all of you who say, well, I'm not so sure if vaccines are bad. My doctor, the nurses, the pharmacist, everyone in, you know, the media says they're good. Are they? Have they ever gone out to speak with the people whose millions of children have been injured, many dead? You'll hear from a 20-year-old, dynamically healthy young woman who died right after taking three of the Gardasil vaccines. At the same time, there's a new article out praising the Gardasil vaccine, how it's made major improvements. We will challenge that. We will deconstruct their arguments and show you that it is a worthless and dangerous vaccine. Plus, you'll hear from the mother of this person who died. So that's what we have to deal with. I'm also going to deconstruct the background of the Clintons. I've done some research. I'll share the benefits of my research on the Clintons and official public policy, plus some counterpunch, Richard Behan, the Clintons and Wall Street. He's done a really good job of taking a look at the $68 million that the Clintons have received from Wall Street personally. 24 years of enriching each other. It's as if they had a conjugal relationship for a quarter century. It didn't benefit the American public. It sure did benefit them. So would you still vote for a person if you knew that they were behind so many bad things? For example, did you know that Hillary Clinton helped sponsor the coup in Honduras? Do you even know the Honduras president, Manuel Zelaya, was overthrown by a military coup? Now, the United Nations, the European Union, and the Organization of American States all condemned the coup, but not Hillary Clinton. She supported it. Why? And would you support a person that intervenes in the lives of millions of people, that causes millions of deaths? Millions. When you add in what happened in Iraq, Afghanistan, look at Yemen today. She was one who greenlit the $54 billion in arms purchase by the Saudis, and the Saudis are creating genocide in Yemen. They're dropping our bombs from planes we built that were passed by her personally as Secretary of State. So before you vote for someone, why not take a moment and look deeper than the platitudes heaped upon her by the New York Times and other publications who are all part of that inner circle? Let's begin. First up, we're going to take a look at the latest on health and healing, and that's what we do every day here. Extra virgin olive oil. I can't say enough good things about it, especially if you buy a very quality brand, making sure that it's organic, cold-pressed, and you can see by the color, it should never be light. It should be kind of like a darkish green color, and it should have a very distinct taste. Otherwise, you could be buying some adulterated, organized crime soybean oil or cottonseed oil that's repackaged. But if you're taking the really good stuff, a study out of Italy showed that when it comes to the healthy benefits of extra virgin olive oil, it's really important that you understand that your heart is getting this. Just a few teaspoons a day will help lower your blood sugar level. Think of the 150 million people in the United States who are overweight, have prediabetes or diabetes. That would help all of them. It will help lower the bad LDL cholesterol, especially after meals. Quote, lowering post-meal blood glucose and cholesterol may be useful to reduce negative effects of glucose and cholesterol on the cardiovascular system. And that was from the lead study author at the University of Sapienza, University in Rome. So extra virgin olive oil, it is terrific for you. Garlic, in any form, you can have it raw. That's a tough way to take it, but it's really good. You can have the odorless liquid. That's terrific, and probably for most people, since it doesn't leave a breath odor and it goes immediately into your bloodstream, that's the most medicinal. That's the most functional. That helps lower your blood pressure, kills bacteria and viruses in your throat, in your stomach, in your intestine. It's really good. Or to lightly saute it. That's also good. So no matter how you get that garlic in, do so. This is from the National Institutes of Integrated Medicine, Australia. And this is their official government report on aged garlic extract. This would be a liquid. And it says, quote, with more than 1 in 4 people globally suffering from hypertension, that's high blood pressure, and 40% of cardiac-related deaths related to it, it's an important breakthrough. Quote, aged garlic extract has several benefits for your heart, your brain, and your immune system. Our study specifically looked at the cardiovascular benefits. We found aged garlic extract to be as effective as standard blood pressure medicine in reducing blood pressure in people with high blood pressure. In addition, aged garlic extract reduces arterial stiffness, inflammation, and other cardiovascular risk factors while being tolerable. So that was terrific, and and the extract also brought down the blood pressure substantially. So that's one good way to get your blood pressure down if you're having problems and you don't want to be on the meds and you want to get off. From the University of California, San Francisco, homeless people suffer geriatric conditions decades early. Quote, homeless people in their 50s have more geriatric, meaning older, conditions than those living in homes who are decades older. That's according to the latest research. Although the people in the study had a median age of just 58, they had more trouble bathing, dressing, and eating than 80-year-olds had who were housed. They had a harder time using transportation, taking their medications, managing money, applying for benefits, arranging a job interview, and finding a lawyer. They had higher rates of cognitive visual impairment, urinary incontinence, and they're more likely to fall and be depressed. So what is the importance of knowing this? Right now, all around the world, people are looking at what it means to be facing new economic realities. I had an opportunity to watch a short segment on what's happening with water in California. This was in the Los Angeles Times. And I read this piece, and it talked about something they never thought they would see. In affluent areas, where now, and this was specifically in Berkeley, which is a very affluent area, and it's right close to San Francisco in Marin County, you have trees falling over because they haven't been watered. All the lawns, all of the hillside, everything is brown. Of course, that's aesthetically not pleasing. In and of itself, it's no big deal. But it makes it far more vulnerable for fires. That is a big deal. And then the people have been doing a pretty good job. So we commend the people for even having a greater cutback on water than what Jerry Brown, the governor, said they had to do. They were rewarded by cutting back even more than what they should have by having their water bills raised. And that little tax abatement they were given, $2,000, the IRS now says that that's considered earned income, so you have to pay taxes on it. So let me get this right. First, going above and beyond what was expected, you're now penalized with taxes and a higher water bill. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But also now there's a kill-off of over 80 million trees. That's a lot of trees. And all over the area, in every block, every residence, trees are dying, just falling over. It's epidemic. It's everywhere. Of course, what this does, if you're honest, you ask yourself, what is the likelihood this is going to end, even with the torrential rain from an El Nino? That's temporary and that's gone. What it means is you're back to full drought, back to a burn season, and back to living in a desert that's only going to get worse. Oh, and one other thing. When you flush a toilet and you're getting your waste that goes down into the tubes and out through sewers, it requires about 150 gallons a day to move that waste, human waste, out into the catch areas where it can be processed. Because people have been cutting back on their water use, showers and washing, and even these composting toilets or low flush toilets, there's not enough water to flush out all the human excrement. As a result, now you have massive buildups, massive, of human excrement all throughout the city in the sewer systems. The trouble is that gives off horrendously vile sulfur fumes as it biodegrades down, and that means the air smells terrible 24/7. Because there's not enough water to flush out these sewers. So look at the mess. Now imagine what possibly could go wrong. Well, here's the likely outcome for those of you living in most of California. You're going to have less water from the Little Colorado. You're going to have less water from the Sierra Nevada runoffs, even though there was, over a period of about 6 weeks, more snow than usual, but that's going. You're going to have a hotter temperature this year than probably ever before in the state's history, which means that whatever little water was accumulated will be gone, and therefore you're going to be even further restricted. It is inevitable. You're going to have more of your landscape drying out, more fires in that dried out landscape, more trees dying. Also, when it gets that hot, there's an infestation of beetles that can kill millions of trees. And then that means that you have even more fires because there's nothing holding in the water. So you have no longer the same carbon sinks, meaning the tree holds in carbon. You're going to have increasing water bills, less water and paying more for it, and you're not going to have the aesthetics. So all those golf courses, thousands of them, and gated communities in the next 3 years, they're going to look a whole lot different, and the property values are going to plummet. My prediction is that you'll have a relatively small migration out of the state. The number one state in America where people are migrating from is New York State, and understandably so. It is so utterly corrupt at every level and is not hospitable to people who want to do any kind of home-based business or anything else. If you only knew how easy it would be to buy places in New York State, but then try to do something with it, and then you'll see what the power of the government is in keeping you from doing it. But in other states, Texas, other places, North Carolina, they're more friendly, and they also are more long-term sustainable. But California, you'll have too many people out of work. You'll be paying very high prices for produce. The bee colonies are decimated, 50% dead. They're needed for pollination. One-third of all your crop out there requires bees. The people who are running these giant factory farms are tied in at the level of maintenance with the agricultural companies, so they'll continue to use the glyphosate and the other pesticides and herbicides, fungicides, artificial fertilizers. You'll have continuing dust bowls. You'll have heat waves. You'll have fires. And all this before you get a hurricane and the erosion of the seashore, and you're getting radiation coming into the water from Fukushima, and more thousands upon thousands of sea mammals, sea lions, whales, dolphins, seals dying, and fish that you cannot eat, seaweed that you cannot eat, and water that will not be safe to bathe in, even as politicians are standing on the beach, much like in the movie Jaws. It's good. Go in the water. Go in the water. And you're thinking, should I? And that's what you got to look forward to. There's a time in life where you just got to, no matter how much you're resistant, you got to look at the fact you're in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong idea, and you do not have the right support system. What possibly could go wrong then from there on? Being overweight, linked to poor memory. This is the University of Cambridge. They say if you are overweight as a younger person, you're far more likely to have episodic memory loss, where you don't have the ability to recall past events. And that's happening now. This was published in the Quarterly Journal of Experimental Psychology. And so what causes poor memory? I mean, normally, when you're young, when you're in your 20s, 30s, your memory should be at its peak. Well, alcohol, that'll do it. Remember, every drink, you're killing upwards of a million brain cells. Fast food diet, the American junk food diet, that's destroying the mitochondria, and that's the energy factory that your brain needs in order to process any information. heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, from all of the vaccines, the silver mercury filling in your mouth, from the polluted food that you consume. All that destroys brain cells. But more than anything for this generation, cell phones and computers. When you have it up by your head, your head's right up near any form of one of those portable devices, you're receiving electromagnetic pulses, and that destroys chromosomes. So that's why we have the first generation in American history that is having these memory lapses in their teens and 20s and 30s. Finally, five ways environmental toxins increase your risk of cancer. One, the environmental toxins, that means everything from the type of chemicals you wash your clothes in, never use bleach, by the way, and never use any fragrance ever. Zip, zero, none. But when you do, it's a chemical and that can impact you, but also all of the plasticized material. Just think in the summertime. It's hot. You have bottled water in the car. You're out shopping, go to a movie, come back. You turn on the air. You take your bottled water, you drink it. While you were away, the polymers inside that plastic bottle were leached into the water, and now you're drinking it. Not good. That impairs your immune system. And when you impair your immune system, you make yourself more susceptible to cancer. You damage the DNA strands. There's your electromagnetic pulses. There's your carbonated beverages. There's your nutrient deficiencies. There's your high-protein diets. DNA strands being broken. Then you have endocrine disruption. There's your pesticides and why you should eat organic, because those are endocrine disruptors. And then the interruption of cell death. It's normal for healthy cells to eventually die off when appropriate, but environmental toxins can actually induce what is known as loss of life. And so you don't have a cell dying at a normal time. And then you have liver toxification. Remember, everything you put in your body, your liver has to process. If you're putting in so many toxins each day, especially the sugar, then you've got problems. So look at the aflatoxins, the dioxins, the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, the heterocyclic amines, the BPP, the heavy metals, the pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, heterocyclic amines, electromagnetic field radiation, ultraviolet radiation. That's just for starters. And that's what people consider normal. I'm Gary Nall. Let's take a quick break and come right back because we have a lot more to share with you. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. For those of you who listen to us all over America and all over the world, and I want to thank the people who go to our website to read the articles, we really go out of our way. We have a team of scholars and residents, and all they do every day is find the articles that would be meaningful for you, but we also know we have a worldwide audience. So we have to ask, if you live in Poland, if you live in South Africa or in Paraguay, what's important to you? Well, there's some universal truths and universal concerns like our health and happiness. But then we also look at the issues, the environmental issues that impact us and what we can do about them. And we every day we put dozens and dozens of articles up on Progressive Radio Network website. And last week, just in 5 days, 1,151,000 people went there and got information. So that's just collecting information. So we're happy people go there. I had a lot of email. I'm on the road about what happened on our local station that I've been on for 39 years. on WBAI. They're in Fun Drive, and they had to extend it another week, and so I'll be preempted again this Friday. And I was asked not to Fun Drive. I volunteered. I said I'd be happy to offer to support this wonderful station, but my criteria was I would like to pitch the station, meaning your premium would be support the station. Because when I first came on to the station 39 years ago, the only thing that we pitched was the station. After all, if you're getting good information and it's empowering you, that's what you're supporting. The premiums of books and DVDs came later. And I have no control over if they put a person on and who they put on and what they're offering. That has nothing to do with me. In any case, they've chosen not to accept my helping them. That's fine. I hope that people do continue to listen and continue to support them so they can get the money to pay for their premiums and get up to date. But hopefully that'll be over by the end of this week. Now, I believe that people have not looked carefully at some of the major issues, including our public health policy. I have always advocated for a single payer so that no matter what condition you have, you can afford it. I believe that if we took 4% of our income that went exclusively into a public health program, similar to Medicare, and that you would then within that have a choice of doctor, have a choice of type of treatment. So if you wanted the orthodox program, you could have that. But you would not be excluded, nor would you be limited by an insurance company. If you wanted hyperbaric, ozone, if you wanted chelation, or homeopathy, or Ayurvedic, or vitamin C drips, or holistic nutrition, you would have that also available. Right now, how much are you paying? The average person in America is paying 10% of their total income on Obamacare. And for many people, it's much higher, can go to 21% of their income. Hard to imagine, but that's the reality. 1 in 10 Obamacare customers who earn between just 2 to 5 times the federal poverty level will have coverage costs that exceed 21% of their incomes. And that's according to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, as well as the Urban Institute. So on the one hand, we're told we can't afford, you know, universal health care. And I'm saying, yes, you can. And think of how much we would save if we did not have doctors and hospitals being afraid of lawsuits. So, A, you have no-fault medical care, meaning you cannot sue a doctor, hospital, or nurse for, you know, gazillion dollar in damages. You could bring a claim, but you would be reimbursed based upon getting you well. And if that's not possible, what you would have lost in actual income. So there wouldn't be the whole punitive thing. So that would help we, the American people, who think that lawyers, most of whom are parasites and exploit every situation to their own advantage, they would stop that. Secondly, that would save about in the neighborhood of $200 billion a year in unnecessary and expensive testing that you don't need. Secondly, if you took the profit out of medical care, which it should not have, then you wouldn't be paying $100,000 for a round of a drug therapy, whether the drug worked or not. And you wouldn't have to pay $80,000 for heart surgery when you could get the same identical surgery at the same level of efficacy and safety in most of the other countries of Europe. So you take that out. You take away the bureaucracy, you take away the excess paperwork of the doctors, you protect the doctors, and even go one step further. I believe that doctors who want to opt into a public participation, meaning they work for nonprofit hospitals, we should pay for their medical education completely, 100%, so that the doctor is not brought out of medical school and internship and residency. And I disagree completely. I think residency and internships, the way they're done today, especially internships, they're abusive. They're a violation of basic common sense. You can't have someone. Would you want someone working on you in an emergency room after they've been up for 30 hours? make it something that you help them with their education, they in turn work for the public good. That's a fair exchange. And then if people want a private doctor, fine. Hire whoever you want and can afford. But for all the rest of the American public, over 275 million, they should be able to have high-quality medical care, scientifically based medical care, which it is not today. It is pharmaceutically profit-based, and take the politics out of medicine and put Hippocrates back in medicine and bring back the spiritual element into healing, which is important in all the other traditions, and even set up an international consortium of people who are experts in the native healing, Chinese, Ayurvedic, Bush, Native American, whatever it is, to show that they have thousands of years of background and experience helping people get well. We say it's not scientific. We take their curcumin and try to find the active ingredient in their turmeric so we can patent it to have it in a drug that would cost 1,000 times more than we just took turmeric. That's how we do it. We do everything wrong except emergency medicine that we do right. Everything else about American medicine is wrong. So just remember, those who supported Obamacare, do your homework. See how much it's actually costing. See how much people, it's adversely affecting people. See how many people are still not covered. Universal care, everyone's covered. It's the humane thing to do. Also, I want to deal with this. This is from Natural Health. They did a good job there. They talked about how Big Pharma covers up antidepressant cause of birth defects. It's mainly through false advertising and deceptive promotion. It's led to some deadly consequences. But Big Pharma appears to be acting outside the law no matter what the cost. That appears to be the case with manufacturers of antidepressants like Lexapro and Paxil. Mothers of babies born with birth defects have filed numerous lawsuits against Forest Labs, the manufacturer of Lexapro, for failure to warn them of potential risks to their newborn babies. Meanwhile, class action lawsuits against Paxil, parent company GlaxoSmithKline, have already cost the company billions of dollars in compensation. Yet research shows both companies were aware of problems with their products, but chose to keep the information concealed or failed to issue proper warnings. And to take advantage of your corporate power, knowing that no politician right now would challenge what I believe is not sacred and should be absolutely challenged, that is the charter that allows you to function as a corporation. If it can be shown that you engaged in malice aforethought, meaning you knew a drug was dangerous, you still went ahead and did it, and you knew that the cost of doing business would be to pay out a certain amount of money, but you would still make a massive amount of money, then just like the banks who did that by laundering drug money and terrorist money, but they got to keep 100% of the profits. They didn't have to give that money back, but they paid a penalty that was generally 1% of ill-gotten gains, but they got to keep the gains. If you had the ability today with a new law to revoke charters that engage not in an act that makes a mistake, but rather in a premeditated one, meaning you take the company out of business forever, and then you hold those who were the policymakers personally, criminally liable. Then let me tell you, you wouldn't have bad medicine. You wouldn't have corruption on Wall Street. You wouldn't have the simpletons, the lunatics, the sociopaths who run our banking system, because they would have nothing to protect them. So when you, as a pharmaceutical company, when you look at Paxil and you look at these others, and antidepressants have been linked to septal heart defects, pulmonary hypertension of newborns, a fetal neurotube disorder, underdevelopment or missing parts of the skull, spina bifida, pulmonary stenosis, pulmonary atresia, when you knew that was there and you hid that, well, you don't deserve to be in business any longer. You should be taken out of business. But you're smart enough to know who to bring in for those big lectures. Bring in the Clintons. Bring in others. And they'll do your bidding for you. I'm Gary Noll. Now we're going to go over and we're going to say hello. First I want you to hear this. This is the mother of a 20-year-old girl. It's a short, just minute and a half piece, talking about how vaccines caused the death of her completely healthy girl. Now, mind you, her figures are off by almost 200%. So the figures you hear about when she says these number of injured and these number dead, triple that, and you'll be closer to the accurate number today.
Hi, my name is Karen. This is my daughter, Megan. Megan, we spread her ashes here November 15th. She passed away on that day, and we came up here on her birthday, which is Thanksgiving Day, November 27th, to spread her ashes. Megan was 20 years old, would have been 21. Megan had taken the series of the Gardasil vaccine. She had had her last series in September of 2008. Saturday morning, I had talked with her as she was going to come over and help the family paint the house. 2 hours later, Megan was found dead in the bathtub. She had been getting herself ready to come over and passed away. The autopsy report said it was undetermined cause of death. Couldn't find anything, but Megan was a very healthy, active young lady. She was going to college. She was wanting to get into radiology, general studies. Megan's life was taken so quickly without any warning. Like I said, she wasn't sick, but now she's not here with us. We are desperately begging the Obama administration to please investigate this vaccine, as it has already taken 27 young ladies like Megan. There is over 14,000 adverse effects, and we need some answers. We need to find out why these young ladies are losing their lives and why so many of them are sick. They have seizures, they have paralysis, and the list goes on. These are all seemingly healthy, healthy young ladies. After taking the Gardasil vaccine, they have these unexplained medical issues. So we ask, please, that you help us.
All right, there you have just one person, and her numbers are way low. Let's go over now and say hello to Richard Gill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Gary. How are you? I'm just going to...
Good.
Can you hear me all right?
I think you're on Skype. I'd rather you just be on a regular telephone.
Okay, but can we use Skype for now? Or
yeah, okay, we'll use Skype.
All right.
Go through and tell us why the Gardasil vaccine is one of the most, if not the most dangerous vaccine, and there is no science to support that it will prevent cervical cancer. That is a mathematical, hypothetical model. It's not based upon real science because there's been no long-term studies, and why the numbers of young women, generally teenagers, who are ending up with paralysis, ending up with seizures, ending up dead, and it is not being discussed in the mainstream media. Instead, you have these AstroTurf articles coming out saying, great news about Gardasil, tell us what's not great about it, and deconstruct with fact the blatant inaccuracies in the support of the pro-vaccine Gardasil movement.
Well, I think first to begin that, we should remember there's two ways of preventing Gardasil. One is the claims of the efficacy of the HPV vaccines, but the second one is pap smears. And going back from 1955 when the pap smear was invented and going through into the mid-90s, as there was the increase in the use of pap smears, there was already a 74% decline in cervical cancers from pap smears alone. And it's estimated today that just doing pap smears, you can prevent HPV infections by over 80%. the efficacy claims for the Gardasil and all are 70%. So right there, you just have some very, very clear statistics showing the pap smears are more effective than the vaccines. So that's one. These studies that are coming out to try to show and prove the efficacy of Gardasil are just so skewed. You just look at the studies and how these are. There's no biological basis for any of these studies. These are cohort studies or just comparing different population groups. I think the one that is most quoted and is really the most telling of the perversity, the grotesque perversity in this kind of science, you can find from a Journal of Infectious Diseases. It's one of the first major studies that came out that the industry put out to try to prove Gardasil's efficacy. And it was based on about 750 girls, but only half were sexually active. And out of that group, only 110 of them had received at least one dose of the vaccine. So therefore, you're looking at the majority of girls who were unvaccinated and half who were not at risk at all because they were not sexually active. And these are the kind of studies that they throw out. So you can't come up to any kind of a statistically significant figure to make any kind of declaration that there is a reduction of HPV infection due to the vaccines alone when you're looking at these kinds of figures. I think there's just a very concerted effort to deny any kind of injury associated with the HPV vaccines in this country and in the UK. But if we look around the world, we're seeing many countries now that are doing very serious reviews about Gardasil and Cervarix, and particularly in Denmark and Japan, a number of the Latin American countries now, Colombia and Brazil. In France, this has become a big issue that their ministry is looking at. So if we look around the world, that we're seeing many countries are taking a second look at the HPV vaccine, but there's no effort to do so in this country right now.
At the very beginning, you mentioned Gardasil. You actually meant to say human papillomavirus. And also let us remember that most women in the United States will develop human papillomavirus. However, the body can rid itself of this virus about 98% of the time.
90% of the time, that's correct.
And so therefore it is not the epidemic that we have been led to believe. And we've had more people die from the vaccine than young ladies who would die from cervical cancer due to the papillomavirus. And only a certain number of the strains of that virus, out of 100 plus strains, only a very small number are actually proven to cause cancer. And even the developer that we interviewed extensively said that there has been no long-term studies on this. You know, it's based upon a theoretical model, but it's a very profitable vaccine. It's the most expensive vaccine there is. And the fact you have to get it three times, now they want to give it to boys, and there's no science behind that at all. But that's what happens when you have a corporation that's too big to stop, who can hire all forms of scientists and think tanks who put forth people who say, yes, we need this, and then to attack a person who says, shouldn't we look carefully at the science? Because any country that's looked carefully at the science would never recommend a Gardasil vaccine. And in the United States, we not only recommend it, but in the state of California, we mandated it. And I think that is serious because it disempowers all those parents, like this one you just heard from, who believed in vaccines and then found the terrible consequences of not doing their homework. So I just want people to realize whether you vaccinate or not is your choice, but at least know the other side of the story before you make up your mind, then you're a more informed consumer. And guess what group of people in the United States have the lowest rate of vaccine? And that is the women who work for Lawrence Livermore. As a group in the United States, they're highly educated. They want to do their homework. They want to see what this is actually doing, the vaccines, not just Gardasil. And they're the ones who are saying no after looking at the work. And who are the anti-vaccine people? Barbara Lowe Fisher. Well, look at what happened to her son. That's why she founded a whole movement. Look at all the people out there, the millions of American men and women who are now challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines because they were all pro-vaccine and they were damaged, their children were damaged, and now they're suffering, and the government was not there to help them. The scientific and medical community was not there to acknowledge everyone was in denial of this. So we have just more and more people becoming victims and more people speaking out. So that's good.
Bring up one other point that's very, very important here. And this is in the medical establishment, at the clinic, in the physician's office, where there is just serious medical negligence. And that is, it is well known in the industry itself. The CDC will state that children, or kids or girls, or, you know, we're giving this vaccine to 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds. If you have an HPV infection already, the vaccine is useless. So we are not even testing any of these children prior to even giving the vaccine. And so this is just, and why would you do that? Profit. No, there's no reason whatever. If you're not going to be testing a child before, or to be certain that the vaccine would even be effective, because if you have a plantar wart, planter's warts are HPV. So that's just another point I wanted to raise there.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
Okay.
And Richard Gale today posted a very important article that he and I researched and wrote together on the Gardasil vaccine, plus two other articles that are brand new on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And we deconstruct all the arguments by the pro-vaccine people using the best science, showing that they have never been shown to be effective by gold standard double-blind placebo-controlled studies, and they have never been shown to be safe for any given individual. And we interview toxicologists and ask them, the mercury in vaccines, safe? No. You kidding? Not at all. Neurotoxic. Aluminum as an adjuvant? No. Polysorbate 80? No. Formaldehyde embalming fluid? No. Human fetal cells? Any problem there? Yes. And yet you're told they're safe. And that's just the Orwellian way that we do things. Richard Gale is a scholar, and I thank you, Richard, for being on today.
Hey, thank you, Gary.
Now we're going to hear from Cornel West about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. A short piece, please listen.
So let's just say this the way it should be said. Democrats need black voters. The African-American community is very important to that party. You could argue they're very important, period, but that's a discussion for a different day. So what do we see in that voting bloc support? Came out big in Nevada for Hillary Clinton. She is presumed to have an in with African-American voters in a way that the Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders does not. Is that true? How can it be turned around? Let's discuss with someone who knows all of these issues better than I ever will. Professor Emeritus of Princeton, author and Bernie Sanders supporter, Professor Cornel West. Professor, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So let's look at the field and you make the case. The presumption from the Clinton campaign is this isn't just about likability. This isn't just about familiarity. This is about what has been done. And while Bernie Sanders says the right things, he's had a lot of years in the Senate. He has not done things for the African community the way Hillary Clinton has. Fair criticism?
No, not at all. I mean, Bernie Sanders, one of the two white public officials who supported Jesse Jackson in the 80s, that took tremendous courage. Why did Brother Jesse win the primary in Vermont? Bernie Sanders. My dear Brother Chris, Sister Hillary Clinton is the Milli Vanilli of American politics. She lip syncs, she gives lip service, but when it comes to policy, who supported crime bill? Who supported not just deregulating of market of banks, but also pulled the rug from under welfare? She talks about her work with the Children's Defense Fund way back in the 70s. Doesn't say a word about being a Goldwater girl. Doesn't say a word about supporting a candidate who Martin Luther King called the there's no moral case for Goldwater. He's the most dangerous politician. She's vigorously campaigning. She shows up and gives these wonderful speeches sounding like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders on the ground getting arrested, marching with Martin. The problem is black voters don't know his history in the way in which they know the symbolic language of Hillary Clinton. But on the ground, she's calling black youth super predators in the 1990s. That is the most demeaning, degrading language to our precious young folk. Sometimes do the wrong thing, yes. Acting gangsters, yes. We know they got gangsters on Wall Street. How many Wall Street executives go to jail? Zero. She's too tied to Wall Street with all that big Wall Street money flowing her way, my brother.
She says on the other side, I voted for the Brady Bill. Bernie Sanders voted against it many times. He wanted to protect gun manufacturers. He hasn't done what I have done to address the actual problems.
Then why does he have a D-minus when it comes to the NRA? She uses that one little element to take the subject matter somewhere else and not focus on her record.
Is a little element to the African-American community?
One element in terms of jobs with a living wage, when it comes to education, when it comes to decent housing, and when it comes to Wall Street. You know, and I know she and Bill received $151 million.
You're saying the money's a problem.
Unless she thinks we were born at night but not last night. Good God Almighty. We know the Wall Street influence on her has been intense. That's precisely why she and Bill repealed Glass-Steagall. These has direct connection with black folk. We got a neoliberal black political class who's on the Clinton bandwagon and the gravy train. And they are trying to convince large numbers of black folk we won't do it. Now, part of the problem is, my brother, corporate media hasn't been as fair to Bernie as he should. You all did encourage him, and I appreciate that. But when it comes to
nobody's had him on more than New Day has.
No. This particular program has been. I'm talking about corporate media as a whole, because, I mean, we know Donald Trump himself is a Frankenstein of corporate media. They cover every Twitter. They cover every speech, every word. If Bernie had that kind of coverage, people wouldn't know who he is.
He's got his own hashtag.
But look how much money he's saved because the corporate media follows him every second, every minute. But when it comes to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thank God to this show, but not your show is not typical. He hasn't got the exposure to see one fundamental thing: profound integrity, genuine conviction, and on the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. What other higher standard do we have in American politics? How many politicians do we know have genuine integrity? You can count them on your hand. Hillary Clinton's not one of them. She's not one of them, bro.
As Pop used to say, you can count them on one hand if you've been playing with fireworks.
And I tell you one thing, your beloved father's one of them that we can count on one hand. But that's rare, my brother.
Professor Cornel West, thank you for being on New Day to make the case.
Thank you so much.
Now, keep in mind that Hillary Clinton called herself a Goldwater girl. She was proud of it. What do you know about Barry Goldwater? First, he opposed the 1964 Civil Rights Act, one of six Republicans in the Senate to vote against it. This is the year that Hillary supported Goldwater against LBJ. LBJ carried 95% of the black vote. It was Goldwater who called Martin Luther King a demagogue, and his campaign tapped into the anxiety of whites over speed of civil rights and racial equality. The Clintons, because they are a tag team match, used the race card as a means to counter Republican backlash. In fact, Clinton embraced more of Reagan's agenda on race, crime, and welfare and taxes. And the Clintons deny that racism is tied to economic and policy. Clinton's decimation of the American factories through the free trade bills and acts had an immediate impact upon African Americans who had a higher percentage of the blue-collar workforce. Hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs because of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. He was the leader of the corporate globalization effort. And by the end of his term, unemployment among blacks quadrupled. And that was also where they lost the jobs. And this led to rise of the crime under Clinton. So Clinton's get tough on crime, of which Hillary Clinton was an outspoken supporter, this was all racial. And while on the campaign trail, I don't know how many of you remember this, but Bill Clinton flew back to Little Rock to assure the execution of Ricky Ray Rector. Ricky Ray Rector had a lobotomy. He was so mentally impaired, a black man, the psychiatrist said that he didn't even understand the concept of crime. When they came to execute him, he asked to put his dessert aside so he could get it later. And Bill Clinton executed that man? You know, there's a lot that Bill Clinton's done wrong. I don't know anything right. But killing a black man who had a lobotomy? And all for political reasons. When he left office, Human Rights Watch reported up to 90% of drug offenders in prison were African Americans. The Clintons boasted of low unemployment during his reign. Yes, of whites. Unemployment for non-college educated blacks was 42%. Why don't you challenge them? Especially if one of your families was one of those 42% unemployed because of the Clintons' economic policy. He simply escalated Reagan's war on crime and war on drugs. He initiated a $30 billion crime bill, and he led the three strikes, and you're in prison for life, that Hillary supported. But she got money from the private corporations for prisons. She loves seeing poor people put into prison because the people that give her the big checks are the ones who put you in prison. And this isn't the state now. These are private prisons. In 1996, Clinton declared, quote, end of big government. Really? Then why did you keep giving the Pentagon more money than they even asked for? Yeah, it was the end of the welfare system. The law known as Aid to Families with Dependent Children, and it was completely supported by Hillary Clinton. And Clinton slashed overall public welfare by $54 billion, and then extreme poverty doubled under Clinton, and people who couldn't make ends meet had nothing under Clinton. And Clinton's so-called success in managing urban poor was actually only a reallocation of funds. And while billions were slashed from public housing and child welfare, it was transferred to incarceration and prison. And Clinton's penal budget in 1996 was twice the amount of food stamps. And public housing was slashed by $17 billion. Funding for corrections was boosted by $19 billion. So Clinton took you from your public housing and put you in the big house. Bill Clinton eliminated the Pell Grants for prisoners seeking higher education. Well, there's the one group of people who need a higher education. It's prisoners. And Clinton passed legislation making it harder for poor people to get public housing and for them to be denied shelter. So when you're thinking about, gee whiz, you just showed an overwhelming amount of support, why don't you pull back from wrapping the Democratic banner around you and monitoring yourself as a good Democrat and look at what it means to be a person who understands the consequences of an uninformed vote. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening. Look forward to having more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have a couple of announcements real quick, if I could.
Sure.
I'm still interviewing people for our retreat. We completely filled up the first week. We have some interest in a second week. And I'm also interviewing people for our work-study program for those weeks. So if people are interested in coming to the retreat, you've explained a little bit about it. If you want to talk a little bit more about it, I could certainly give out my number. And I've had some just wonderful people from the audience, Gary, giving me a call. A lot of new people very interested in coming down, as well as people who've been to past retreats and they want to kind of reboot again, and they're very excited about coming.
Okay, well,
this is
the only retreat for the rest of the year, and it is 1 week where we go to a beautiful environment up near the Arkansas, near the Arkansas Mountains. There are several states that combine there in one of the most beautiful areas. And we bring together a great group of people from around the United States who provide insights, guidance, support for people who are looking to detox, de-stress, reformulate the next step in their life. We had the other day a Dr. Kiefer, a professor of oncology, a board-certified oncologist, and one of the most respected and trusted oncologists, and she came. And I asked her a question. I said, if you knew there was a better way to treat your patients, would you? And she had to think on it. And then she had to weigh the fact that what if it competed, and we talked about this, what if the way that would be better, more efficacious, safer, without the side effects, what if that ran contrary to your conditioning and the expectations of the people that you're supported by, your hospital, the oncologist, your partners? And would you still then have the courage to say, you know something, I've worked with thousands of patients for the last 20-plus years. I have not gotten the results. I'm going to try something different. Would they support you? Would you be willing to take that risk? And that question has not yet been answered. But because she came, because of what she saw, because of the transformation of people during that 1 week, she says, I am now in deep consideration of this with my husband, Jan, to determine the next step in my life. But there is a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. As long as you don't know the truth, you don't have to act upon it. Now she knows the truth. I hope that she has the strength of character and spiritual value that she will act and give one up, go forward. So that's where we stand, where people can do as much or little as they want. They can eat the greatest food, vegan food, juicing, exercising, counseling, wonderful yoga, meditation, and artist healing, in one of the most pristine, beautiful environments in America. But they have to believe that they deserve it. And if a person believes they deserve to give themselves that, then there's no reason in the world they wouldn't. Because the reality is that most of people's lives are a highly structured, ritualized process of repetition, where almost every day what a person does, what they say, what they eat, what they drink, who they speak with, the routes they take to work, how they shower, the clothes they wear, the television they watch, the radio they listen to, it's all structured. It's like the Academy Awards last night. I don't watch things like the Academy Awards because I don't like the idea that you have a room filled with sociopaths, narcissists, megalomaniacs, and cokeheads, and surgically enhanced features all getting together to tell the world how perfect they are. When, as a filmmaker, I know the truth. And so I don't participate in it. But a lot of people have no excitement in their life. They have nothing that is living a legacy. They just have being accepted because they don't challenge the ritual. They don't challenge the meaning. They don't challenge the structure. And now they can. Because when you come to a place like this retreat, we challenge everything. We open the door and allow people to see what is possible, and some of those people have had transformative moments and have gone on to change their lives. That's what's possible. So if that's up for people, let them give you a call.
Okay, my number is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. 6198. Give me a call and I'll look forward to speaking with you.
Good. And this is the only one we're doing this year. So this is it. So if you want to come and enjoy this and benefit, because I've got a whole lot of projects I'm working on, and I'm premiering 4 new films over the next 14 months. So this is the only time I have to give there. So a lot of the other things in life you can do day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, until you look in the mirror and all you've seen happen is yourself getting older, grayer, sagger, bagger, and impotent. Or you can give yourself a break and put some function back into that life. Have a nice day, everyone. Eutrice Lead up next.